Summer brings with it many pleasures, and if you're lucky, one of those pleasures is the time to dig into a great book. This hour, we'll find out what should be on our summer reading lists. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our annual summer reading show today. With me are Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. We'll find out about the best new novels and nonfiction books being released this season. So get your pen and your beach bag ready, and also post your recommendations on our Facebook page and Twitter at IPR Talk. Join our conversation. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Memorial Day weekend has passed. Kids are starting to get out of school in spite of all of those makeup snow days. Vacation season has begun, and that means it's time for one of my favorite shows of the year, our Summer Books Show. And with me in the studio to give us their recommendations are Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Jan and Paul.
Hi.
Thank you for being here. And Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. Hello, Annie.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And because we have so many books, you should see the table here piled high with books, so many books to talk about. We're not going to be taking calls this hour, but we would love to get your recommendations for what you think should be on our summer reading lists as well. Tweet us at IPR Talk or post on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. We're going to start with fiction and we're going to start with Annie. What's your first pick of the day?
Okay, my first pick of the day is My Name is Resolute by Nancy Turner. And some of our listeners might remember her from the book called These Is My Words, which came out a number of years ago. It's historical fiction, and it follows the life of a woman named Resolute. And she's born on a plantation, very privileged life. And when she's a young girl, she's captured by pirates. And then her story goes from there. She's sold as a slave. She's captured by Indians. She lives at a convent. She lives and participates through the American Revolution. And she has this long and colorful life. It's an epic story. She's a great, great character. And it's a wonderful summer read.
So historical fiction, does it sound plausible? I mean, those are some pretty fantastical
I know, it is. No, it goes along very believable. The pirates were very active in the Caribbean at that time, and the Indians were buying and selling people. And so, yes, it's you feel like you're right there living it with her. Right. Lots of drama.
You'll get swept away.
You will. Yeah.
My Name is Resolute by Nancy
High
Turner.
Action.
High action. Yes.
And Paul, you want to go next?
Okay, I want to talk about a book that was written in the 80s, I believe, and it's called During the Reign of the Queen of Persia by Joan Chase. And it's a truly marvelous novel about farm life, about a sort of a matriarchal farm in Ohio, and five sisters who each one kind of looks up to the next one age-wise. And the men on the farm are sort of passive-aggressive as, you know, for defense. The title During the Reign of the Queen of Persia comes from the fact that the guy, the dad, anytime anybody asks him a question, he always says, "Ask the Queen of Persia over there." But lot of it is funny. A lot of it is very funny.
And is this a new reissue? Or?
This is a reissue from the New York Review of Books, that wonderful series they do that rescues beautiful novels and actually nonfiction as well. But I'm so glad to see, like, it's funny, but like there's a scene where an aunt comes to the farm, and for about 45 pages, she dies of cancer in the most heartbreaking and beautiful set piece I've read in a very, very long time. And they have ants who come down and visit, and the men hate them, but the women love them. Who are, and they're weird. You know, one of them is a Christian Scientist, and one of them brings exotic cheeses from New York, and they just, that's great to see on a farm. But I absolutely recommend, it's not a long book. I recommend anybody.
If you're somebody who's not going to have a whole lot of time,
you
can't get swept away on an epic. This looks like a fun, easy read.
This is
read.
A non-epic, yeah.
All right, During the Reign of the Queen of Persia by Joan Chase. And Jan, that brings us to you.
Well, I have a novel here by Mona Simpson. She wrote probably 20 years ago. She wrote a novel called Anywhere But Here that sort of definitely put her on the map.
Movie.
And movie, yeah. But the book is better than the movie.
Yeah,
much better. I agree.
But her new book, Casebook, is the story of a young boy and his friend who start spying on his mother, mostly because they want to know what she's got in store for them, but instead they find out about her love life and the disintegration of her marriage. And it's sad and funny, though. And the mother is a scientist, and the parents are trying really hard to have a quote unquote good divorce. I think at one point the son says, "My father's going for an A in separation."
Oh.
But she, she talks about the fact that I read an interview with Mona, and she talked about the fact that when Henry James wrote his famous novel from the point of view of a child of divorced parents, What Maisie Knew, that was also just made into a movie, the divorce rate in America was 7%, and now it's 50%.
Wow.
But it's no less distressful. I mean, even though it's maybe less, you're less isolated, you're still, as a child, as distressed. But these boys are just on the brink of adolescence. And so they're discovering a lot about adult life at the same time that, anyway, it's sad, but it's also very funny. She's very funny.
All right. That one is Casebook by Mona Simpson. And that brings us back around to Annie.
The next one that I want to talk about is actually history. It's called 80 Days, and it has the subtitle Nellie Bly and Elizabeth Bislin's History Making Race Around the World. And this one is sort of what it sounds like. It's two early female journalists, the late 1800s, who think that they might be able to beat the protagonist of Around the World in 80 Days, Phineas Fogg, I think his
Fogg. That's it.
Phineas Fogg's 80 Days Around the World. So they think they're going to do it in 79 days. And so one of them sets off and heads east, and the other one sets off and heads west, only they don't actually know about each other until later, and they're from two different publications. Nellie Bly was famous for going undercover into a mental institution and exposing the conditions there. So she was a pretty hot commodity at the time. So this book shows that race around the world, so it has that suspense, but it also is a snapshot of the world and living conditions for common people, what it was like to ride a train, what it was like to arrive in China, all of these things all around the world, and very much also a history of the condition of women at that time. So it's a great read.
It's
nonfiction, and highly recommend. This one was fun. It's been very popular with our customers too.
All right.
Sounds wonderful. That's 80 Days, Nellie Bly and Elizabeth Bislin's History Making Race Around the World by Matthew Goodman and Paul.
Okay. This is my funny book of the year. The Last Days of California by Mary Miller. It's her first novel. And it's about a family in going west from Alabama to California, where they will witness the rapture. The father is, you know, he doesn't come off as crazy as so much as really enthusiastic. And he has the two daughters who are sort of the main characters in the book, handing out tracts at every Waffle House they pass. And the daughters are teenagers, and they're one of them is sort of going along with the rapture thing, the younger one, and the older one is just saying, "Oh, that's a lot of crap. You know, she's much more experienced, both of the girls, as they go across the South, are so embarrassed about the South. They say, "Oh, I hope nobody from the North comes down and sees this little town. Oh, it's going to be excruciating." And Jess, the one whose voice it is, the younger girl, is as they go across, she starts thinking that this rapture is less and less likely. And it's, in a way, it's like a family vacation, but they're going to the rapture. And what a good writer she is, and what a good ventriloquist of teenage girls.
Oh, terrific.
I highly recommend The Last Days of California.
All right, by Mary Miller. Sounds like a lot of fun. A great road trip book, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you'll feel fortunate even if things are going a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
Jan, what's your next pick?
Well, I also have a California novel, although it's not quite as... Well, maybe it's rapturous in some ways, but it's not the
not
rapture.
Funny.
it's by Michelle Hunevin, and the main character is named Cressida Hartley, and it's taking place in the 1980s, kind of the early 1980s, and she has done all the work for a PhD in economics and is trying to write her dissertation, and she's stuck, and she goes into her parents' she moves into her parents' mountain cabin in California, and immediately gets involved with, a laborer, a working class guy named Quinn, and it becomes kind of an obsessive love story. But then there are all these back characters that, I mean, you know, you see into her parents, like sort of dysfunctional marriage and especially dysfunctional surrounding money. And actually, the whole book is a very interesting look at class in America because. Her parents have made it, but on the other hand, their working class roots are just one generation behind them. And so her sort of obsession with this working class person, and she's trying to deny that there's any difference between them, although she is truly obsessed with him. And her sister has fled the family and is living in England. And it's actually, you know, it's just a really good read. It's a really good love story. Mm-hmm. Love and,
And other things.
Yes.
All right. That is Off Course by Michelle Hunevin. And we are talking about the best new books out for the summer. With me in the studio today, Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We also have a conversation going on our Facebook page and on Twitter. So give us your recommendations. What are you reading this summer? What should everyone be reading this summer? Post it on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about summer books, the best new books for your beach bag or to take along on your road trip this summer. And, of course, with me in the studio are Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram from Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Annie Leonard is here. She drove all the way here from Knoxville, from The Next Chapter in Knoxville. And we are talking about their favorite new books. You can also share your favorite reads on our Facebook page or you can tweet us at IPR Talk, but we're back around to Annie for your next pick. What's next?
The next one I want to talk about is called Norwegian by Night by Derek B. Miller. This is a thriller, technically, but it's so much more than that. This is one of those books where I forced the people around me to listen while I read passages out loud to them. It just was so delightful. And it's basically the story about an octogenarian who may or may not have a touch of dementia. He's a Jewish man, and that is very important to his self-identity. And he was a Korean War soldier who may or may not have been a sniper. And he was a watchmaker all his life. And all of these things come into play through the story. He's moved to Norway to live with his granddaughter and her husband after his wife has died. And one day, the neighbor above comes running down and brings him her little boy and is subsequently murdered. And so he goes on the run with this little boy. So you have this man who speaks no Norwegian. You have a child who won't speak at all. And they're on the run in Norway. And he may or may not be in control of his faculties. And he's quite a character. And he's got a great culmination to the story. But it really is about redemption and about self-identity and about whether you tell everybody the things that you've really done in your life. And it was absolutely delightful. Highly recommend it. Norwegian by Night by Derek Miller.
Just when you think every plot has ever been written, you come with something completely new and unlikely. That's
it
wonderful.
It was so unique.
All right. Norwegian by Night. And Paul, you're next.
My next book is The Dismal Science by Peter Mountford. It is a first novel again. By a guy who actually, you know, the dismal science is economics. And it's very, you have to really convince people that this is a good book because a novel about an economist, you know.
It's a hard sell.
Yeah. But it's about the World Bank in the days of Paul Wolfowitz.
Yeah, you're still, when, it's still
when
hard.
The, when the conservatives believed that the war was over. And they had won. And the main character is Italian and an older guy. And everything is sounding old to him. Let me just read a bit from the beginning because it has chapter one, meetings. The annual meetings had become a kind of rowdy reunion, bearing increasingly the muffled bonhomie of a great funeral. At the Omnis and the Sheraton's dueling bars, dignitaries, old friends and colleagues, and rivals who'd been driven apart and together by the conflicting currents of their careers, gathered over strong drink and weak gossip. For most, the old ambition that had brought them together was now largely vacuumed away. Vincenzo planted himself at the Sheraton's superior bar, occasionally reading briefs in the comfortable chairs of the adjacent lobby, but otherwise holding to a tight orbit. He doesn't know it at the beginning of the book, but he's finished with economics. And the tone of his voice telling the story makes the reader understand, maybe before he does, how really through he is. He has a daughter who is in college and is a radical and is always giving him a lot of stuff about working on the wrong side. And his wife has died recently, and he feels at a kind of a loose point. But it's not exactly a middle-aged crisis novel. It's much more than that. It's a life crisis novel. And the guy who wrote it is maybe 30, and his character is 70, and I think that's a very nice accomplishment to make.
He's a believable 70-year-old.
Oh, he is a very believable. He's smart, but he's followed paths the same way over and over again, and he's ready to go.
All right.
But it's a great book.
Okay, The Dismal Science. Pick it up in spite of yourself, is what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah. Yes. There is one good book about an economist.
All right, Jan, what's your next pick?
My next pick is a collection of short stories. Actually, it's called A Novella and Five Stories by Jean Ross Justice, and it's called Family Feeling. And I was just thinking when Paul was talking that that I read a quote yesterday. I think it was John Cheever's birthday, and I read a quote of his saying that novels are about are about family life and not politics. And I thought, that can't be true. The two things are not mutually exclusive. But I do seem to have chosen books that in which politics are tangential. They're underlying today for some reason. But anyway, these stories are also often told from the point of view of older characters, although the author, Jean Ross Justice, is older. And the first one, The Long Novella, is a very complicated, lovely story about a man who's in his second marriage with a young child, married to a woman much younger than he, with a young child. And he gets a call from his first wife telling him that she's dying of cancer. And they have been pretty much not speaking.
Estranged.
Yes, they were estranged. She wants him to come see her. And so he goes and he can't leave. He needs to be with her throughout the rest of her life, which is not long. But the young wife, of course, does not understand this and she doesn't know what to do. And she has a baby. And she takes the baby and goes to his father. And so it's a very subtle, complex story. And as are all of the stories in this book. We've sold a lot of it. I've sold a lot of copies of this book, and I've gotten a lot of reader responses because they're unusual. Matt Loggie at Iowa Book and Supply said there's not one sentence in this book that isn't perfect and necessary.
Wow. Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's a compliment.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, so Family Feeling by Jean Ross Justice. And this is our summer book show. We are about halfway through the hour, and I know we are not anywhere near halfway through our list. So we'll pick up the pace a little bit. And Annie, what's your next pick?
Okay, so I've indulged myself just a little bit today with some series. And this is the first of those. So the series is about a private detective named Claire DeWitt, and these are written by Sarah Gran. So the first one is Claire DeWitt and the City of the Dead. The second is Claire DeWitt and the Bohemian Highway. It just came out this month in paperback. Claire DeWitt is a very strange character, but she considers herself to be the world's greatest private eye. And she is a disciple of an old French detective who inspires a sort of religious devotion among his followers. And she uses sort of Buddhist philosophy, her dreams, and frankly, a fair number of drugs to help her solve her cases. But in the first book, she goes to New Orleans to try to find out what happened to a prominent man who disappeared during Hurricane Katrina. And this was the most compelling portrayal of the Hurricane Katrina situation that I have read anywhere. Really helped me understand how things happened the way that they did. In the second book, she's in California and she's trying to figure out what happened to her former boyfriend who has been murdered, and lots of side trips. But the writing is gorgeous. It's very much a Raymond Chandler meets David Lynch, if that makes any sense to you. Very edgy, but still that sort of...
That's a really good...
Punctuated... phrasing.
You should copyright
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Can I use that?
Well, we had a joke about doing a book of blurbs where we, you know, Jane Austen meets...
Franz Kafka.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. All right. That's Claire DeWitt and the City of the Dead, Claire DeWitt and the Bohemian Highway, the first two books in a series by Sarah Gran and Paul.
Okay. One of my favorite people and cartoonists and writers in the world is Roz Chast. Can we talk about something more pleasant? Is such a perfect book for the boomers who are having now to think about what to do about their parents. Because she was an only child and her parents had her fairly late in life, and they lived on and on and on, and they were difficult.
They accumulated things.
Yeah, and they accumulated things, and they bossed each other about. Well, the mother bossed the father about. And if you don't know Roz Chast cartoons, they're in almost every New Yorker. They're the ones where people sit sullenly on the sofa and think about, ponder various things. But it's so, this is so funny and so sad at the same time. You just don't see this very much.
And it's a memoir. Does it have a lot of illustrations?
It's all illustrations.
Okay, so it's almost a graphic memoir.
It's a graphic memoir.
All right, perfect.
her mother is so aggressive, she'll say, get ready for a blast from Chast.
And every living room should have a book on the coffee table that says, can't we talk about something more pleasant?
Yes, right, exactly.
And some living rooms more than others, absolutely. All right, so can't we talk about something more pleasant by Roz Chast. So it's a graphic memoir.
Yes.
And Jan, it's your turn.
Well, so if we can move into memoirs, I'm going to talk about Kevin Brockmeyer's A Few Seconds of Radiant film strip.
And Kevin was a guest on Talk of Iowa a couple of months ago, so some listeners will be familiar with this one.
And it's a memoir of seventh grade, but it's told in the third person, so it sort of reads like a novel. But it's just amazing. It's amazing that he can remember. It's taking place in the early 1980s, and so if you are, as we are, very able to remember the 1980s and all the cultural,
or if you were in middle school in the 1980s, as I was, it was very.
Yes, and I just thought maybe I would read just a couple sentences from it. Well, the situation is just that, you know, he's in seventh grade. He's kind of nerdy. And he's in Little Rock, Arkansas. And his parents are divorced. That seems to be a theme in the books I've picked to bring along. But there's this he spent a summer with his father and stepmother in Mississippi, and he's come back to Little Rock. And he says, barely a week has passed since he returned. It's written in the third person. Since he returned to Little Rock, home to his records and his comics and his room with the big wooden K on the door, home to his friends and their 10,000 changes. Suddenly, everyone is saying badass rather than awesome, lame rather than stupid, gay bait rather than faggot, and mostly the gay bait is him. And that's just like a perfect. Every sentence is like that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's beautiful and heartbreaking and heartwarming and with just a touch of science fiction. Yeah. Was a surprise for me.
And you can't believe it's over when you finish it.
Right.
You fly through it.
Right.
Well, he told me when he was here that he was very influenced by Daniel Pinkwater. And if you are a fan of Daniel Pinkwater books, you will understand that.
Oh, yeah.
If you read it. Absolutely. So, all right, Annie, back to you.
Okay. Well, I don't have a memoir that I want to talk about next, but I want to talk about The Daughters of Mars, which is by Thomas Keneally. And some of you might be familiar with Schindler's List, which he wrote under a slightly different title. He's one of Australia's literary lights. He's written dozens and dozens of books. But this one is the story of two Australian sisters who volunteer to be nurses during the Great War, during World War I. And they have their own internal family conflicts, which are slowly resolved through the course of the novel. But their first engagement, they sit on a ship waiting for the wounded to come back from Gallipoli. And then it goes from there. It's absolutely amazing. The story itself is amazing, but the writing. A couple of you have talked about how every word is carefully chosen, and I really felt this from Thomas Keneally. What a great story, and it's worth reading just for the writing.
And to see them change from kind of naive types at
country
the beginning
girls.
to grown-ups by the end. You know,
tempered by fire.
Yeah.
All right. So The Daughters of Mars by Thomas Keneally. And Paul, I know that was one of your favorites, too. What's next on your list?
Okay.
Or in your stack.
In my stack. Okay. Peter Matheson, who recently died, and actually the next day or 2 days later or very close to the same time, In Paradise, his last novel, came out. And Matheson writes wonderful nonfiction and wonderful fiction, and this is his Holocaust book, and it's about 100 people who go to a death camp you know, in the 90s to sort of meditate, talk, have share visions of what things were and might be. And the main character is Polish and has no Jewish relatives and is constantly worried about whether he should be there at all. And there are quite hostile exchanges all the way through because it's such a complex, horrifying issue. But the many of the issues are issues that no one has really solved yet. And I think it's one of his very, very best works. The main character, the Polish guy, ends up finding out things about himself that you wouldn't imagine. And
sounds like a book that stays with you.
It is.
All right. In Paradise by Peter Matheson.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with more picks for your summer reading list. With me in the studio, Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville, and Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. We'll continue in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show on Talk of Iowa. We're talking about all the great new books that are being released right now, great books that should be on your summer reading list. We also have quite a conversation going on our Facebook page. So if you have some recommendations that you would like to make, books that are on your reading list or you think everybody should be reading, go ahead and post on our Facebook page and make a case for it, too. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. With me in the studio, I have Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville, Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Jan, it's your turn.
Well, I'm going with another memoir, and it's Barbara Ehrenreich's new memoir, Living with a Wild God. And Barbara Ehrenreich is famously the author of Nickel and Dimed, you know, where she went undercover and worked,
minimum wage. Job.
Yeah, a fantastic book. And this book, though, is a memoir. And she actually, after she'd finished Nickel and Dimed, and right before it was published, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she was putting all her papers together. Some library was buying them. And she came across this notebook that she'd kept when she was a teenager. And she had never reread it, but she had never let it get lost. And so she says in the beginning, her 50-something self had this young girl was waiting to be discovered by her 50-something self for all these years. And what it was mainly was a chronicle of this experience, this sort of transcendent, mystical experience that she'd had, that she'd never understood or wanted to talk about because she was, you know, a journalist, a scientist, and an atheist. She was her parents were atheists. Her parents were crazy. I mean, they were...
Atheism and crazy, not always connected, but
yeah, that's true.
Two different characteristics of these people.
They were alcoholics. I mean, it's amazing that she survived and became the person that she was, but she had this experience with this boy when she was in high school, and they had gone on a skiing trip, sort of. Very strange. And she realized later that part of the reason that he was behaving so strangely with her on this trip was that her father had tried to frighten him before they left, you know. And they didn't eat. She said they set themselves up for what true mystics set themselves up for, hypoglycemia and the kind of physical situation in which you can have this kind of mystical experience. But then she actually had it. And so she looks at what they are and what they mean and how you try to express them, and in the midst of looking at all these other things in her life. And it's really just a remarkable read. She's a great writer.
Oh, it sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. That one was Living with a Wild God by Barbara Ehrenreich. And we're back around to you, Annie.
Okay. Well, I'm going to shift gears a bit. This is another series, Something Red and the Wicked by Douglas Nicholas. And this is really fantasy, I have to say. But it's historical fiction, maybe more than it is fantasy. It takes place in the 13th century and from the point of view of a young boy named Hob, who's an orphan. And he is taken in by a family of travelers who are much more than they seem to be, of course. And they are traveling through England and stopping and healing people. And they're also musicians. And something in the forest is starting to kill people in a terrible way. And so they have to figure out what it is and stop it, of course. In the second book, they're also called upon to combat a great evil. But the really wonderful thing about these is Douglas Nicholas is a poet. And he's a well-known, many books published, but the language is just gorgeous. And his historical research is impeccable. And so you just feel immersed in this 13th century environment and this family that's traveling and the young boy who's such an earnest, observant child. And Molly, the matriarch of the traveling band, she's much larger than life. And, of course, they can all whip out a bow and arrow and shoot bandits at a heart-stopping rate and all kinds of wonderful adventure and love and action. So this is my favorite kind of book. I just love a good battle.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Now, it also sounds like those of us who spent a lot of time reading young adult fiction might also really enjoy this. Would this be something that a teenager could read and enjoy as well or not?
Probably an older teenager, I think. It might be a little bit complex, and there's probably a little bit of what we call content.
Right.
That would not work for the younger
set. Because that's what it is.
All right. Something Red and the Wicked, a series by Douglas Nicholas. And Paul, we're back to you.
Okay, I have a book which is actually a collection of essays edited by Bruce Joshua Miller. It's called Curiosity's Cats, Writers on Research. And it's an amazing collection of essays. Some of them are by historians. Some of them are by novelists. Some of them are nonfiction writers and memoirists, but they have all come to a very serious point in their writing where they must do research. And each one has different style, and each one has different experiences doing this. And they have it's just a great collection. If, for example, if you were going to write something and you needed to do research, this is a good book to start with because you're just a lot of different people with a lot of different experiences telling you ways to do it, their theories of how much research is absolutely necessary. And Bruce has one himself about a New York mad bomber. He had been planning to write this book forever, and he never wrote it. But I think he got bogged down in his research. And so it's a very funny essay by him. And it's a book that someone will require for a class at some point. But it's also just a great fun book to read in bits.
All right.
Keep it at bedside.
Right, so you can pick up and yeah, read an essay and
yeah,
thumb through and pick the one you want. All right, Curiosity's Cats, Writers on Research, edited by Bruce Joshua Mill and Jan.
Miller.
Or Miller, sorry. Miller. Thank you. Jan, back to you.
Well, mine, actually, this book seeks pretty well into Paul's because it's called The Empathy Exams by Leslie Jamison, and it is a collection of essays, personal essays, but she uses research in illness, really, to look at her own life. I mean, well, she's had a lot of actually pretty intense experiences, bodily experiences. I mean, I guess that's what we all have, but
not anyway, out of a bodily experience.
But the title comes from Leslie went to the writer's workshop in fiction. She also published a novel called The Gin Closet. But while she was in school, she had a job that you can, I guess anyone can get at the University of Iowa Hospital, where you are a fake patient, and you are, you know, they give you the background of the disease you're supposed to have, and then they let a resident or an intern
diagnose
you. And one of the things that you have to – then you grade this this intern on how well they did, and one of the things that you have to grade them on is how empathetic they were as they examined you. And that led her to think about actually empathy for the self. A lot of these are about empathy for the self, but they're really remarkable essays. There's one about this very weird disease that no one – that one would think was completely a hypochondriac's disease, but it actually is something that happens where weird bugs and things crawl out of the body. Mm. And there are all these examples of it from the Middle Ages on. But one of the most amazing pieces in here is her examination of the writing of James Agee in light of something that she's going through in her life, an addictive, you know, disorder.
And, sounds fascinating.
Yeah, she's a great writer. And this book has just been getting a huge amount of attention. I mean, every day.
A book of essays never sells this many, usually.
Well, especially a book of essays that's this sort of highbrow.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
And
yeah. The Empathy Exams by Leslie Jamison. We've got about 5 minutes left. So why don't, let's see, Annie, why don't you give me just three more titles very quickly?
Okay. Three more titles. One of them is I Shall Be Near to You by Erin Lindsay McCabe, which is the story of a young woman who enlists as a man in the Civil War. And so this is her story. Also, because it's summer and we all need a good beach read thriller, I've got The Runner by Patrick Lee. And if you haven't read Patrick Lee yet, he's a great deal of fun. He wrote the books about the breach.
Is it L-E-E?
L-E-E.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
It is. And the last one, picking and choosing, there's another series by Ben Winters that begins with The Last Policeman, Countdown City, and World of Trouble, and they're pre-apocalyptic. A comet is headed toward Earth and going to kill everybody, and how does everybody respond? Do you carry on? And so that's what this series is about. Really fun reads.
All right.
The cop still
catches
criminals. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul?
The Swan Gondola by Timothy Shaffert.
And again, he was a guest on Talk of Iowa not long ago.
Just amazing. This is a great, humorous, lively, beautifully researched Midwestern novel about the Omaha World's Fair, which most people do not know about. And Carl was cashiering the other day. And just laughing his butt off. He is not sort of the most
overtly
reader kind of a person at the store. But we had great talks.
Oh, good. That is a fun read.
Yeah, The Panopticon by Jenny Fagan is a Scottish, slightly post-apocalyptic mystery where the main character is an incorrigible 15-year-old girl criminal and is placed in a place called the Panopticon, where everyone can see you all the time. And it's a great read.
Sounds like that could keep you up at night.
Yeah. And Mary Coyne by Marissa Silver. The famous picture by Walker Evans, but the other one, the woman.
Are you thinking Dorothea Lange?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Dorothea Lange photo.
Feels
very
like a pop
good.
Quiz suddenly, right?
of the woman with her eyes full of worry, and the child hiding her face in her. Well, Marissa Silver found out who that woman was and found out a lot about her and wrote a novel which might have been really lousy but turned out to have been beautiful about her story. It's called Mary Coyne. That was her name. And Marissa Silver is the author.
All right.
That is a wonderful one.
Jan.
Well, I have a book of food columns here, a collection of food columns by Leah Askin, who's an Iowa City native, and she writes for the Chicago Tribune, and it's called Slices of Life, and it's just, you know, lovely little, like, two-page essays about things that are going on in her life over, you know, over, like, a 20-year period, and those are all tied into eating and recipes, and it's pretty delightful.
All right.
And
it sounds like one of those you could keep on the bedside table and dip into and out of.
That is exactly
if you're not...
right.
And fun.
You know, yeah. And I have Laurie Moore's new collection of short stories here, Bark, which people have been waiting for this for a long time. Her Birds of America came out like 12 years ago, and everybody's been wanting another collection. She's pretty acerbic. There, I would say don't read them all at once. But one at a time.
Life,
you know,
would look pretty black if you read them all at once, or what?
Well, they do not lack for wit, but they are black, right. And so one at a time.
Just when you need an acerbic downer, pick up the book. All right. We all need those every once in a while, right?
Right, and also a way of looking at the people around you, maybe. But. And then this is a really quite amazing new biography of E.E. Cummings by Susan Cheever. And Susan Cheever is John Cheever's daughter. She's also a novelist and a memoirist in her own right. But her father was quite a close friend of Cummings. And so she's got a really, you know, insightful book here.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know what? We have time for one more round with just the title. And we will put these complete lists up on our website. So if you've missed some, don't worry.
Okay. I think The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, also known as J.K. Rowling. Don't miss this. A lot of fun.
All right. Paul?
The Black-Eyed Blonde by Benjamin Black, a great homage to Raymond Chandler.
All right. And one of your... guilty pleasures.
Yes, right, exactly.
All right. And Jan.
Thunderstruck, a new collection of short stories by Elizabeth McCracken, who's the author of The Giant's House. And she is a remarkable writer.
All right. So you've given us a lot of food for thought, a lot of books to read this summer. And do you have something that you're dying to get into that you haven't read yet?
Well, I have an advanced reader copy of something called Bitter Greens, which is a retelling of the Rapunzel story based on the life of the Versailles woman who wrote it in the first place. Yeah, so that one's looking like a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Annie Leonard from The Next Chapter in Knoxville, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Paul Ingram, thank you so much. And you'll be back on the show in the not too distant future to talk about your new book.
Yeah. You're a pro.
But this is a collection of poetry.
Yes, right? It is. The Lost Clara Hughes of Paul Ingram.
All right. We are looking forward to that. And Jan, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sherry.
Jan Weiss-Miller and Paul Ingram, both of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And again, we will put this complete list up on our website. We will link to it on our Facebook page. We will put it up on Twitter. You will be able to find it. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And yesterday, I had the pleasure of visiting with about 70 third graders at Weber Elementary School in Iowa City. And I promised them that I would give them a shout out on today's show. So go Weber Dolphins. Thank you so much for having me yesterday. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.